Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hi, I'm Ramin Karimloo, and welcome to my podcast, The Hang, where I get to hang out with some of my friends and get some much-needed face-to-face time and talk about, well, whatever. Welcome back. This is part two of my hang with my prolific artist friend, Hadley Frazier. Let's pick up where we left off in part one, where we just started getting into the Phantom of the Opera 25th anniversary.
I don't spend an awful lot of time, and I never used to, listening to musicals, but those are the two that I did when I was
Blood
at university.
Blood Money, Damn for All Time. You could sing it right now?
But not at pitch.
No, but I mean words.
My God, I saw him. He looked three quarters dead.
No, the first one.
Oh.
Now if I help you, it matters that you see. Next line.
Now if I help you, it matters that you see. This sort of kind of things are coming hard to me. It's taken me some time to work out what to do. Is that right?
Yes.
I'd wait the whole thing up before I came to you. I had no thoughts at all about my own reward.
Yeah, but at this point, the orchestra's
there are
four bars ahead of you.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, no, but I kind of know it.
Well done, brother.
Like, I wouldn't be able to do that for Les Mis, which I've done, 800 shows of?
If I thought Phantom's the one thing that's going to be stamped in my brain.
Yeah, really?
No.
See, actually, this is something that I find quite funny is people have a natural assumption that I know an awful lot about Phantom because of the 25th. Dude,
you
only did those three shows.
That's it.
And I didn't remember half of that. So it's lovely because it obviously made such an impression on people, that production. And I
to this day, you're still getting tweets?
I still get a lot of love for it, and it's wonderful, and I love it. But I sort of don't have the ability necessarily to respond as much because I don't know it, you know? So
how much of that time do you remember?
Very little, because we only had 2 weeks to rehearse.
Yeah.
And I was still doing Javert in the evening, so I was
going in to do
Les Mis at night. So I really don't. I've told this story before, but I'm sure if you look on the DVD, the split second before we start singing the duets, all I ask of you.
Yeah, good job.
I was convinced I didn't know the next line.
That's an awkward song, though, because the words.
Yeah.
It's just almost the same, but they're not. And
yeah,
then,
I know.
Is this where I say this one or this one?
Yeah. But dude, that was the 25th anniversary at the Albert Hall, going live to cinemas.
No, I felt,
and I was like, I don't know what's coming next. And there it is.
Listen, I felt for you. Me and Sierra had history with it, at least.
Yeah. And Andrew remembered your names.
Well, I remember it then.
Yeah.
You were just grabbing my arm. Why was it with both anniversaries, Les Mis and Phantom? We were side by side for all our bows, and we're like children. You can't just bow, can you? Either one of us is standing on each other's toes or your elbow is going into my side, but we still have to keep a straight face.
That's part of the joy of it.
What happened in that speech? He's like, oh, thank you, Ramin.
Ramin, you are the modern day Phantom. Like, I am so proud of our association, and you are the epitome of the Phantom. Sierra, thank you so much. You are my Christine for the 21st century. Like, I couldn't be more proud of you. And then he turned around to me and he looked me in the eye and he went, and this is in front of the Albert Hall, and he went, and haven't we had a lovely time?
I remember you went, that's fine.
That's fine. That's fine, that one. God bless him. No, I mean, I'm very proud of it. I'm very proud of our involvement. And actually, I sort of think about what we achieved in those 2 weeks was quite remarkable. I mean, we never teched the second act.
No.
And so to have got through that was quite something. And I sort of thank you and Sierra, really, for sort of holding my hand through most of that and sort of dragging me through. But I don't know, maybe I'll go back to that show in the years to come. I confess, not one that I have a sort of burning desire to go back to. Because I suppose I feel like, maybe this is going back to some of the conversation we've already had, there is so much out there. There's so many new things to discover, I suppose. At the moment, the thing that I find most satisfying is the variety of what's new.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm sort of contradicting myself slightly, given that I'm going back into City of Angels next year.
But that didn't have a full Western run.
No, that's true. We only did, I suppose, must have been about 7 weeks of it.
Because I'm sure at that time, there was I'm sure, even hopes of a transfer.
Yeah, it came very close, but for whatever reason, that didn't work out. And so I suppose that always felt like unfinished business. So thanks for digging me out of that hole.
But also, you have that, you know, that desire and that excitement for new and, you know, the diversity that you talked about, because you also write, and you are writing,
mm-hmm.
and you're contributing to that diversity.
I suppose so,
and
yeah.
And new works.
Yeah, I guess so. I suppose that also, and I don't know how you feel about this, that also comes down to that thing of when you have done something for 20 years, you kind of go, oh, I have a vague idea of how to do it. No, I'm not going to be English about this. I have an idea of how to do this now.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like a little bit more, I would like to have a bit more agency. I suppose writing or directing is that sort of thing where you feel like you potentially have a little bit more agency as a someone who's been in the business. And
because you went to university in Birmingham,
correct?
For English
literature and language and theatre. So I did. Well, it was called joint honours. So yeah,
amazing.
I wasn't very good at the English language stuff. All the sort of the grammar stuff left me kind of cold. But I enjoyed.
You're a wonderful orator.
I enjoyed English literature, the seminars that I did turn up to.
Did you have a writing bug then?
No, I really didn't, actually. And there were other contemporaries of mine that really did, and they've gone on to some success, I suppose. I was keen to be an actor, which is why I think probably now, I don't regret going to university, but I suppose if I had my time again, I think I would have probably gone to a drama college.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, I think.
What do you think you missed out on?
That's a really good question. I'm not entirely sure, but I think I'd like to have finessed just a little bit more of my technique earlier on and not relied upon instinct.
Right.
Is that fair to say?
I get you, yeah.
And I think I'm now much keener to search out technique and all of that sort of stuff than I was back then. So maybe it's happened the right way around.
Technique as an actor.
Yeah, exactly that. And my course was actually very practical at the time. The Birmingham University Drama course was a very practical one. And so we got to do an awful lot of performance and
so
all
of that.
What
do you mean technique as an actor then? Because if you do your prep, you've learned your lines, you show up to day one, but you're not using the example of the Stanislavski actioning.
Exactly. Yeah, I suppose there are things like those schools of dramatic technique that I wish I was slightly better.
So whether it's Meisner, whether it's Stanislavski.
Exactly that.
Well-versed to all of them. So, you know, when you get there, like, this will serve this piece better.
Exactly that. And right. And that sort of links back to that thing of going, what's the authorial intent here? You know, if you're doing a piece of David Mamet, I think it's really helpful to have read David Mamet's books upon performance.
Yeah. Have you read True or False?
I haven't.
It's great.
Yeah.
And I like that idea of just like, not prepping for the end game. You prep for that first step. You just...
Right. See, I that's something I go, I should go away and read that.
It's been a while since I read it, and I'm right away thinking someone who has read it recently is like, yeah, well, you don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
But I suppose that's the only thing that I would sort of do differently. I mean, and then I left to go to the Royal Academy of Music to do the musical theatre postgrad, which was great, and that helped hone a certain amount of singing technique, I suppose, and did a bit of dance as well, which I guess helped.
We saw in Frankenstein.
There you go. A little bit of that.
Frankenstein.
Yeah. And there was some acting on that course, but I suppose really not quite as much as I'd had at university. So I can't remember where I was going with this. What was
how you wanted to be...
Versatility.
Yeah.
So...
with your acting technique.
So all of that kind of stuff. But now I suppose there's an awful lot of stuff that I did in English literature that I now go, that's the stuff that I'm coming back to with the writing. So in terms of narrative structure, in terms of characterization, in terms of plot, in terms of, you know, putting a piece together. And I'm going back now and I'm wishing I'd paid a lot more attention in my English literature classes and I'd read all the things that were on those.
So what was the first step at writing that you went, oh?
Well,
or someone approached you and said, can you write this?
No.
How did they know you were a writer?
The first one that has been performed was Committee that we wrote for Donmar Warehouse 2-3 years ago.
Is that the first time you put pen to paper?
No, I had done actually quite a bit before then. I mean, we had collaborated on
Houdini.
Houdini.
Was that the first time?
No, I had written while I was living in the States. So this would have been about 2007, 2008.
Boy, and it's ringing.
I had a relatively fallow period where I wasn't working all that much. I couldn't work really apart from in the entertainment industry because of the visa that I had.
The joys of pilot season.
The joys of pilot season.
You think it's going to be busy.
And you're not.
And you're on Venice Beach for After Time.
Which is lovely. But then there was a part of me that went, what am I doing? Yeah. I'm just wasting time.
That's what happened. Too much of a good thing.
Absolutely. So I wrote a short film script and I wrote a play script, neither of which I'm glad have ever been produced.
You did it just to pass time and just to keep your brain
I suppose so. Also because out there is a very admirable trait, I think, especially in LA, of creating one's own work and creating one's own opportunities, which over here I don't think we're as good as. I think one tends to get sort of parked into a box as you are an actor, you are a singer, you are a writer, you are a director, whatever. Whereas I think in New York, in LA, in the States, there is much more sort of acceptance of a diversification and I want to do this now and a support in terms of doing it.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
So,
well, you must feel a change of that happening over here now.
I think you're right. I think there is a bit more of a support network there. But certainly when we were starting out, I think that there was a bit more of
100%.
Sort of pigeonholing going on.
Remember that thing of like, I just can't get into TV. They don't want to see us in theater.
Yeah.
Which is insane.
Which is crazy, really. I mean, we did a few readings of the play that I did. Mm-hmm. But now when I think about it, I did a very, very classic thing, and I'm still something of a novice writer, but I started writing the play without having done any sort of work in terms of plotting it out, in terms of structure. And now I'd never do that. I would always structure something first and then go in and write something. So it was fortune, really. I had worked with Josie Rourke, who was the then artistic director of the Donmar Warehouse. She's directing City of Angels. Yep. We'd worked together four or five times as actor and director. And I think we had talked about writing, and she was keen for a new piece of music theatre to happen at the Donmar. And I think she sort of, we co-wrote the book and the lyrics for that one. And my colleague Tom Deering, who you know well, wrote the music.
For committee.
Yep. And I think Josie's just sort of went, look, I believe in you guys. I think that you have the wherewithal to do this. And I suppose...
And at that point, had she read any of your previous stuff to even have start this conversation with you about committee?
I'm not even sure she had done. She must have done. Yeah, I think she had. I think she'd read, because Tom and I had been working on something else, an adaptation of an Edgar Allan Poe story that...
Yeah,
sort of hasn't
and
happened.
That was around the Houdini time. Because Houdini also got a bit of what people started talking. They knew about it.
Yeah, for those of you, people won't know this, but there was a Houdini musical that Ramin and I were involved in, and you brought me in as a sort of script consultant.
And I'm still trying to figure out how did I know you were a writer? But I guess I knew it.
Maybe you'd read the play or something.
That point we were writing music as well, so I knew you were great.
But I suppose going forward, looking to the future, which I suppose is what we should do, that's something that I want to do an awful lot more of. You know, I've got a couple of projects that I hope will see the light of day at some point. And that, I think, is the thing that gives me the most joy, other than doing lots of different things. I hope, and I suppose maybe I'll ask you this in a minute, but I hope the next 20 years of my career, sort of looking back on the first 20, sees that same diversification sort of continuing through. So I'd love to keep doing plays, keep doing musicals, keep doing filming and keep writing and keep playing music. I mean, I count myself incredibly fortunate to be able to say that I do all of those things. Where do you, what, I mean, what's the next 20 years to, for you?
Well, it's funny, as you were saying that, I was just going to bring back the praise you gave me when we started, how you were saying, you know, when there's something you want to do, you just went and did it and you learned it. And you've been doing that anyways, when it comes, you've been getting better as an actor. You don't sit around and wait for things. You create, as a writer, you do more and more. I don't know where I was going to go with that now, but I guess the point of that is, because I try and think of anyone listening to this, especially, you know, we got great support out there and there's young folks who look up.
Yeah.
You know, they reach out and they say, well, what do I do? And I never know what to say. So yeah. I thought this podcast will help answer some of those questions. And it just comes with effort and the desire to work hard for something.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think hard work is the thing that I would praise above and prize above all else. I think there is a slight tendency nowadays, I think promoted by those sort of talent shows that have always been around, but now a very big role in the cultural consciousness and certainly in people who want to be a performer. There is that sense of I deserve something because I want it, rather than I want to work hard at something and whatever comes from it, comes from it. Evidently, we all have to make money and we all have to live. So there has to be a balance. You can't exist on reading alone and working on your craft alone. At some point, you know, commercialism has to meet artistry. But yeah. I think hard work is something that I prize above all else.
And that's what worries me. I see it with my kids sometimes too. If it's not in front of them, it's not in front of them.
Yeah.
And they don't know where to start looking.
Uh-huh. But we were probably like that as well. And I think there are people who put themselves through college by working, and there is a absolute adherence to the understanding that hard work goes there. There is an ease of access to things now, I suppose,
which is actually beneficial. Great.
Absolutely. But that I guess just that idea, you're right, of I want something, therefore I'm entitled to it. I think that's something that's really, really dangerous. So I think just work, isn't it, you know?
Yeah.
And that tends to pay off. I also think there's a way that you work with people that comes to help you in the long run as well. It's something that Branagh goes on about all the time is the way that you are in the room with people, the way that you work with people is incredibly important. And people pick up on that, I think, as soon as someone walks into the room. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That is actually something that I'm still figuring out.
No, I don't think so. You strike me as an eminently workable person. You know what I mean? Like eminently collaborative person.
Okay,
career has been collaborating with people. You know, you only have to look at the music stuff that you do to see how much of that. Yeah, of course, it's Ramin Karimloo in concert, but you have a band now who would probably walk over hot coals to come and play with you, right? Because they enjoy that sense of, yeah, they enjoy that sense of collaboration, and they know that what they put in, they get out of you.
So when you do these, what you did at the Royal Academy last week, you said?
Yeah.
Talk me through that real quick. You're there to do what? They have stuff prepared for you? Or?
Yeah, that was a public masterclass, they called it. And so in that situation, we had, I think, 8 people who got up and sang a song. And it was sort of working on an acting through song. It's sort of acting through song class, really. Which I'm always at pains to say, I don't think there is a particular technique to. I think there are things that with experience and with hard work, one can learn. And I suppose there I have encountered teachers in my own time who profess that they have a mastery and their technique is the only technique. And when someone does something differently, it's wrong. Or when a student does something differently, it's wrong. I suppose I'm always at pains to say, look, this is just my opinion.
Yeah.
There is a way of doing X that is completely different to the way that we'll explore it. But I suppose that's why I like to think of it as a rehearsal.
Yeah, and that's why you got to read the person as well, and read the student in his case, because what works for them might not work for the next person.
Absolutely, and I suppose the reason why we, the reasons why those classes exist, as much as to learn technique, is to prepare oneself for being in the industry, and the way that you are in the industry is to be in rehearsal.
Mm-hmm.
Is this making sense?
Yeah,
I mean,
I
think that's the most important part, and so. There are singing lessons and acting lessons and all of that kind of stuff. That hones your technique. But things like acting through song classes, master classes, for me, that is the moment where you're effectively stepping into the rehearsal room.
Yeah.
And stepping into the rehearsal room, for me, means there isn't a right or wrong. There is only a let's try it this way. Let's try it that way.
Yeah.
Let's try it the third way. Let's try it the fifth way. Let's try it the nth way. And at some point you'll go, oh, that feels about right for today.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you find with when you do something like that, is there a general repeating sort of critique or comment you're finding you're giving?
Yeah.
Which is?
Self-pity is the most off-putting thing to see from an audience point of view.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's something that I think as musical theater actors, especially doing things like Les Mis, is really easy. And I know I've fallen into this trap and probably fell into it nightly when doing Les Mis, but the act of self-pity on stage is an immediate turn-off. And so that's the one thing that I will find myself saying more often than not is if you are a character who is facing various obstacles, which most characters should be if it's a decent bit of drama, because yep. conflict is drama. If you are up against it, if you have to overcome an obstacle to get the thing that you want, this doesn't always ring true. But an audience will love you much more for trying rather than giving up.
Yeah, nothing sadder than seeing someone fight back those tears and you're like, oh, you just want to hold them.
Absolutely. And then as an audience member, you go, I want everything that they want. And to a certain extent, I suppose most drama is about what characters want and whether they get them or not. So that's something that I find, yeah, I encounter frequently.
And lastly, how well prepared are you finding students? In
very well prepared. Like, and I think about myself back in the day, and I think, my God, you guys know it, and are already show ready much more than I ever was, or perhaps my contemporaries.
Well, that's exciting and scary to hear, because we got to keep up with the work,
oh,
man.
Oh, man, yeah. And we're tired.
Okay, real quick.
Yeah.
Off top of your head, what's your favorite childhood memory?
Or
one that comes to mind.
Yeah.
That makes you like, yeah, that was a good time.
I suppose in the context of what we've been talking about, I saw my brother in West Side Story at my school. I suppose I would have been about 13, mm-hmm. maybe 14. So he would have been 15, 16. He was playing Bernardo. There weren't many Puerto Ricans in Bracknell in about 1984, so
right.
Apologies for that.
But you get a pass.
Thank you. And I remember sitting in the school hall and hearing Dance at the Gym, the Mambo, and thinking I've never heard music like this before.
Wow.
Where does this come from, and where can I be involved in it?
Oh, man.
And it wasn't that I thought, oh, that's what I want to do. All I thought was, I've not heard music like that before. And I've not seen people on stage with a life that is influenced by that music.
This makes sense. Because you started playing, when you started learning guitar,
yeah.
you did play a lot more of those sort of Spanish sort of chords and stuff. So I remember you showing me.
That's true. Yeah. Well, although that was slightly unconnected. That was because my guitar teacher growing up was obsessed with South American guitar music. And so rather than going through the, I suppose it would have been the Associated Board of the Royal School of Music exams, I didn't do any of that. He just taught me all of those South American techniques like milongas and bossa novas.
Right.
And so that's where my classical guitar playing sort of came through, players like Calcho Torao, who I still listen to today and go, ah, man, that's playing. But I suppose in a sense there was a similar kind of influence musically there. But that's the one moment where I remember going, oh, my word, music has such potential to shift people and change what is going on inside them.
As did his performance of Bernardo Noël.
Yeah, which was exceptional. And talking of people with like short and squat bodies, I think Ed was that at the time, God bless him. He's now a lieutenant colonel in the army and he's quite a roughy-tufty mountain man. But at the time he...
Arguably one of the greatest performances of Bernardo.
I think without a shadow of a doubt.
And finally, what made you smile yesterday?
What made me smile yesterday? My wife and I made biscuits and cakes with Elvie. And although at the time the kitchen was being destroyed and she was falling off the chair and injuring herself.
Rosie, of course.
Rosie. Yeah. There was a moment where I realized that the simple act of baking was something that Elvie sort of couldn't quite believe how wonderful it was. So that was, yeah.
That's beautiful, man.
Yeah.
Rosie, Elvie, everybody healthy, happy.
All good, man.
Yeah. Can't ask for more.
No.
Love you, brother.
You too, man. Thanks for having me on. There you go. The Hang.
We shook hands. It's not like they can see it.
And then we kissed.
Thanks, folks. I had a blast catching up and hanging with my great friend Hadley Frazier. He is an extraordinary individual. I love that man. Don't forget, you can connect with me at bpn.fm/thehang and on Instagram and Twitter at Ramin Karimloo. The Hang is produced by Dory Beristein and Alan Seals from the Broadway Podcast Network. You can find me online at bpn.fm/thehang. Don't forget, you can connect with me on Instagram and Twitter at Ramin Karimloo, on YouTube, a Roaming Iranian, or my Facebook page, Official Ramin Karimloo. Music for my podcast is by my friends and one of my favorite bands, The Dives. Please check them out at their website, thedivesmusic.com. That's thedivesmusic.com, where you can get to know them, hear their incredible music, get links to all their socials, and most importantly, their tour dates, where you can find out where you can see and hear them live. They are truly a great band and they are phenomenal live. Check them out.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com and, of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.